and welcome to the Well and Wild podcast. Before we begin today, I have a bit of an announcement. So I'm really excited to let you know that I'm going to be running my first event at the beginning of July in London. So I'm super excited about that. I'm collaborating with my friend Hayley, who is a nutrition coach. And the event is going to be all about goal setting and helping you make a plan of action. And Hayley's going to be also talking through some nutrition tips to make sure you're eating energy-rich foods to fuel yourself for success. And the whole point of the event really is to help you get back on track for 2019. Because I mean, we're almost halfway through the year now, and maybe you started off the year making goals for 2019, or maybe you didn't. It doesn't really matter. Come along to our event and then you'll have the opportunity to sit down, reflect on all the aspects of your life, including job, relationship, money, things like that, and just get clearer on where you want to be and set the action plan to get there. So tickets go on sale next week. Keep an eye on my Instagram, so it's SusieClark_ and the Well and Wild page, which is well_and_wild. Both of these are linked together in the show notes, so go and have a look at those. And I'm just really excited and I can't wait to see you there. There's going to be a great group of people and it's going to be a really good evening. So now on to today's episode. I have an amazing guest on. She's so inspiring and she's just like, I love her energy. She's really great. So I think you're going to enjoy it, but thank you so much for listening and please enjoy. Have an amazing guest today. We have Sarah Zavick. She's originally from America, but now she lives in Melbourne in Australia. So Sarah was another teacher who taught on the yoga teacher training I went on in March with Stefan, and that's where we met originally. And she's got a really exciting background, and I love talking to her about her travels and things like that. So in terms of career, she actually decided that instead of continuing down a path of a more conventional career in vet science, she wanted to travel the world instead. So she set off, and many years later, I don't think you really looked back, Sarah. Is that right?
Yeah, that's probably a lot better summarized story of my life than I can ever do. You really got it there. So that was good. Yes. Yeah.
Well, welcome. It's really good to have you on. And how are you?
Yeah, thanks, Susie. Yeah, doing well. It's a little bit chilly in Melbourne now, a little bit different from Indonesia. Can we go back already?
Oh my God, I know. How many times have I said that to myself? It's been like hailing and raining so bad in London. It's just not normal for May. I'm just like, I thought I was coming back to summer.
Right, yeah.
Okay, so it would be really great to hear a bit more about your story. So let's start with the decision that you made kind of when you were younger back in America to go traveling instead of like pursuing a career at that time.
Yeah, so... Well, when I was younger, so I grew up, I was a competitive gymnast. I did gymnastics for about 14 years. And when, unfortunately, I had an injury, a knee injury that kind of forced me to retire or quit at the time, after that, you know, in regards to movement and stuff, I always wanted to keep my body moving. But when I was in school and I was looking at, you know, what I wanted to do, I figured at that time that I would follow my father's footsteps and go into veterinary studies, which is something I did. And I was working at his clinic for many years as a vet nurse and absolutely loved it, absolutely love and adore animals, and started my university studies doing that. Which was great. It was a bit challenging. I think a different time in my life, I was enjoying other aspects of being at uni other than actually studying. But eventually, as part of my studies, I needed to, study a foreign language, which I'd started in high school with Spanish. And I decided what better way to learn another language than by going someplace where the language is normally spoken. So I ended up deciding to go to Spain for, it was supposed to be one semester, but then it turned into a full year.
Wow.
And that's just where some some interesting opportunities arose. And that's where I had the opportunity to do an internship with a travel agency when I was in Spain, which was awesome. And that just broadened my mind as to potential of what, you know, I could possibly be doing with my life. And so that was kind of a catalyst, which started to change the course of my life in that time. It was really amazing. I had such a great experience that when I went back to America to finish my last year of studies, I completely changed my major. And I actually majored in Spanish and European studies, focusing on Western European studies. So international studies, long story short. And went back, graduated. And in that time, I'd gotten more opportunity, was given another opportunity to help with a study abroad program, taking high school students over to Spain for their study abroad program for the month. So I helped lead that and take the group over and back to the States. And then in the meantime, I applied to teach English in Spain through a government-sponsored program. So from there, I ended up moving to Spain for 2 more years and taught English in the public school system, which was another amazing experience. And during that time, while I was living over there, I traveled. I just saved my money up, wasn't getting paid a lot, but it was enough, and was just on my mind to travel and to experience and learn as much as I could. It was just an amazing opportunity to like be in other cultures and meet other people. And it, again, it was just another thing that was a catalyst to just broadening what could potentially be out there for myself.
Mm-hmm. I love it when any like Americans or Australians come to Europe, or like I meet them in London and they're like, yeah, I'm going away at the weekend, and then I'm going here, and then I'm going here, and they just, I just love how they take advantage of all the really like the close-knit European community of all the countries and the cheap flights everywhere. It's so great.
Yeah, well, it's been, you know, it was just so amazing to see like how diverse things are, which I mean, in the same way, same, but kind of different. It is like that even in the States, and it is like in a little bit of a way here in Australia, where you go to different parts of the country and, you know, things are a little bit different. Now we don't have, like, we have a common language more or less, but whereas in Europe, you go a couple hours and they're speaking a whole nother language, and there's just a whole nother culture. And so, yeah, I found that really, really fascinating. And for me, it was really exciting where I guess I had a lot of friends and even people when I went back to the States, because already what I was doing at the time, a lot of people found interesting, and but really they were quite surprised. And some people were like, how do you do it? How do you move across the ocean to a whole nother place where they don't even speak your native language? And there's, yeah, already I found a lot of people were a bit fascinated in a way. I don't want to say that in a boasting kind of way, but fascinated about what I was doing. But I don't know, it just really called on me from, I guess, kind of a younger age. And that was probably just from like the way that was brought up to like to travel, even in the States with my mom and my dad, like traveling and exploring and going on trips, even out of the country with my dad a bit. And so, yeah, I guess it just was from a young age already kind of having a little bit of that desire to explore.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's really cool, and you obviously had like a curiosity, which I think a lot of people have, but they don't necessarily have the confidence to just up and go, and especially somewhere where they don't necessarily speak the language. But as you've shown, you know, you immerse yourself in a place and you can learn it. It's not like a barrier forever kind of thing.
No, it was definitely, there was a big learning curve, but by kind of getting put into a situation like I mean, voluntarily, I chose to go, but voluntarily going to Spain, there were so many circumstances that arose that kind of forced me to learn the language, because I needed to learn how to communicate, like even something with my phone bill, or when I got sick and I had to go to the hospital and explain what was wrong, where I was, like, where my stomach was hurting, or, you know, all these different things. And yeah, it kind of forced me in the best way possible to have to learn, and to have to learn the language. And, you know, I look back as well, the girls that I initially lived with when we were studying there, we also made a pact that when we were at home, that we would try our best to always speak Spanish as much as we could. We would try and use whatever words to describe it, even if it was very basic. We just made that pact with each other to try and speak Spanish all the time, unless we were on the phone, because at that time it would cost like 20 cents a minute on our phone plans. So if it was that or an emergency, then English was fine. But other than that, we just made a pact, and we had this imaginary kind of like jar that you'd have to put money into, and that we'd use that to go buy us a cerveza later on, like go buy the beers or whatever, if we spoke English or something. So
I love that.
That kind of also supported, having that support. Yeah. Yeah. And that definitely, I think, made a really big difference too, and when it came to learning the language.
Yeah. No, definitely. I'd also like to kind of pause on this stage as well and talk a little bit about your gymnastics. So when you injured in your gymnastics, and you'd been doing it for, I think you said 15 years, did you kind of feel, how did you feel then? Did you kind of feel like you lost a bit of your identity? Because I hear this all the time, like people who had a passion for sport, who loved it and trained every day and couldn't think of anything else, but then either they gave up too soon or got injured. And after a while, you do become a bit down. And I think this happened to me as well, to be honest. And you, because you kind of lost that love and that identity you had, say, of like being a gymnast, like, did you have that experience, and if so, kind of how did you cope with it?
I mean, I guess like starting from when I was four, and yeah, I was about 18 when I stopped gymnastics. It was something that, you know, it became life. Like, we trained pretty much 4 to 5 hours a day for about 4, 5, sometimes 6 days a week. And not so much when I was like 4 years old, but as I got older, that became the norm. And it was year round. Training didn't really stop. And even, you know, we were kind of discouraged to go on holidays just because we would miss our gymnastics training. But it was definitely like one of the most amazing experiences, even though it was hard and there were tears. And I just found it like a really great outlet for myself. I think growing up, and we have all these different things going on in our lives, and even for me, like when my parents separated, it was a great place that I could go to and kind of like forget, I suppose, about that situation at the time. So yeah, I mean, I found through movement, I guess overall, like that kind of movement, that it was very therapeutic, even though I probably didn't realize it then. But thinking back on it now, that's how I feel that it was kind of affecting me. And when I quit, I still would go back and train a bit, even though I knew I wasn't going to be competing. But I still went back every once in a while. And yeah, my friends and my coaches, like even over the years, I still kind of go back and say hello to any of the coaches that are still around. Yeah, it wasn't very long after I quit gymnastics, I'd gone to a yoga class. And because there were a lot of like movements and things that we did that were kind of familiar to some of the stuff I do in gymnastics, I really enjoyed it. Now, what I realized, I wasn't very mature in a way to appreciate the philosophy that at the time the teacher was talking about.
Yeah.
It was a little bit too airy fairy for me at the time. But so I have to admit, my friend Karen and I, who had gone, we were kind of giggling when the teacher was talking about open up your heart chakra and blah, blah, blah. Like we thought it was a little bit funny. But in the end, I still really loved the movement and how it made me feel and how relaxed it made me feel and how calm my mind was afterwards. And so I kind of was like, oh, this is cool. I'm moving my body and I'm pretty relaxed at the same time. I kind of like this. And I just had made a vow with myself that as well, I want to do handstands until my last day on this earth.
I love that.
I want to do handstands. I want to be able to do splits and back bends and stuff like that. Like, I just have gotten so used to moving that I just love to move, even if it's very small, even if I'm not feeling well. Just doing a little something makes me feel so much better than not doing anything at all. And sometimes it even means just like I'm lying in bed and I'm envisioning my, is that the right word? Envisioning? Envisioning myself. Yeah. Doing the movement, or when I'm thinking of sequencing a class or whatnot, a lot of times it's just I'm lying in bed. I'm not actually doing it physically, but mentally. And I feel sometimes like I'm still getting the benefits of doing a practice without actually doing the practice, which
really
has kind of been an interesting thing I've realized over, like, very recently, over the past couple of years, maybe. I really enjoyed it off the bat, and that's where it started to grab my attention.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any advice for people who are, say, ex-athletes? Because I think a lot of that kind of group do get encouraged to do yoga, or they find it in one way or another. Maybe it's because of injury, or maybe it's because of like sports psychology and the mind and calming down. But because they're a sports person, there's this like inherent thing of when you're moving your body, like you want to compete and you're like, you've got too much energy kind of thing. So I guess this might be something you experienced when you first started, about like struggling with the philosophy and stuff. So do you have any advice for someone who's looking to start yoga and they've come from that sporting background, and how they can kind of get rid of their competitive mind for an hour or something?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something, at least for myself, it did take a little bit of time. I had an interesting teacher when I moved to Australia who would always say, Sarah, stop doing gymnastics, do yoga. And I didn't really get that initially. And so, you know, maybe over time, because it was like years later that I went back to his class, and he was like, you are now doing yoga. Not gymnastics. Aww. Kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I guess there was just maybe a transition in refining what I was doing, in the sense of being like more mindful, more aware of the way I was doing things, the way I was placing my body, the way that I was, you know, I don't want to say performing, but just moving had kind of shifted from being like, I don't want to say showing off, but yeah, maybe
I guess
it was that. Maybe I was just like, oh, because yeah, like in a way I was used to performing when I was doing something, and maybe performing is more an external, is more like an external show of what you can do. Whereas over time it turned more internal and more for myself on an individual level. And I think that's just something that kind of also takes time. And I think as well, having like initially you might shop around a little bit to find a teacher that really resonates with what you want to do. And like I said at the very beginning, to hear the very kind of airy-fairy esoteric part of the yoga practice, which is really beautiful. I think it's really interesting. And for some people, they resonate with that right off For myself, being an athlete, I mean, I wasn't like a competitive athlete, but if you want to say it in that sense or form, like being an athlete, that for me, I really like the more scientific based outlook on the practice. And I think there's really benefits to see and understand and learn about both sides, about all sides of the practice, because it is more than just a physical practice. But I mean, let's face it, a lot of people do it because, and just like I did, I did it because of the movement. I love, and I still do it because of the movement. But then I also over time started realizing and learning and feeling and experiencing the benefits of how it also made me feel mentally and emotionally, especially when there's, you know, the inevitable challenges of life that come up, how it's really helped guide me along the way more than just in a physical sense.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, that makes me remember that a really great book that was part of the course actually was The Science of Yoga. And I would recommend anyone in this situation to read that, because it kind of, I loved learning all about how it affected the nervous system and how all the actual like anatomy worked, rather than kind of like just how you felt. Like you actually learned about the science behind it, and that was really cool to learn, I think, and kind of helped me with my understanding of yoga.
Yeah, it's a really great read, and there's a lot of other texts I'm actually looking forward to. There's another one which I'll also recommend for you to check out, Jules Mitchell. She's someone that I'm really been following for a bit, and she just came out with a book on biomechanics, biomechanics of yoga, and that also I haven't gotten it yet, but I can only imagine, because the stuff that she does and shares online is really fascinating, and everyone's been raving about this book, so that's right. The next on my list to check out.
Yeah, I can put links.
But yeah, I think the science. Ah, there you go. Cool. Yeah, I mean, I love the science behind the yoga practice. And I guess because as well with kind of weaving back to when I was doing veterinary studies, and even though it was more based about animals, there's still that science aspect to what I was studying, and something that I've always kind of loved with science since I was little. And so it just has, you know, kind of in that sense woven in this fascination about how the body works, whether it was for animals or whether now, like even more so for humans, how the body works and how it's all very interestingly and intricately interconnected. So that's just something I'm really looking forward to, even myself, to, you know, keep learning more. Even just today I signed up to do some, have you heard of kin stretch?
I feel like I have, but I'm not really sure what it is.
Okay. Well, yeah, this is another thing I might suggest to also check out. I've just signed up myself to do some online training, and it's movement based, but it's really refined, detailed, intricate ways of how to move the body, and you know, to really, I guess, just open up the doors of possibilities of like how you can potentially move. And in science as well, they say like the more varied movement that you can do, I guess this goes back as well to like athletes who may have been injured or maybe thinking about doing yoga, is like it's very complementary to everything that you do, not just like on a physical level, but also mentally as well, is that the more varied movement that you do, the more resilient that your body can be, the stronger the joints are, the, you know, higher nerve receptors as well. You know, doing things as opposed to not doing anything is going to be really, really beneficial. So yeah, I can stretch. That's another thing I'd recommend checking out.
Okay, I'll definitely check it out. That reminds me of something that you guys spoke about on the teacher training, actually, like not to just do one thing. So don't just spend your life doing yoga, like do Pilates, do HIIT training, do like a multiple of different, I think you called it cross training, basically.
Yeah,
I think that's a really important lesson.
Yeah, it's for sure, because yoga, it doesn't do everything for the body. I mean, it's not necessarily, that's not what it was kind of designed to do, but in our modern day lives, when we have very little time to do something for ourselves, because we can, you know, get so busy, wrapped up with life, with work, with family and whatnot, you know, yoga is going to be a really great thing to do physically and mentally. But then there's also other things that can be really great to great ways to complement and kind of make a holistic, if you'd like to say, a holistic practice for yourself.
Definitely.
So yeah, more things you do are definitely better.
Okay, so let's kind of move on from here on to kind of the next like few years and what you've been doing. So traveling, like how did you get to Melbourne? How have you come, where did your link come from with it, like Indonesia? And I guess at that time was kind of when you started teaching and starting to build your business. So it would be good to hear a bit more about all of that.
Yeah, wonderful. So I had moved to Australia, it was about 7.5 years ago. And that's actually when I really I was getting more and more intrigued about the yoga practice and when I'd done my initial yoga teacher training. A few years after that was when I actually met Stefan from the teacher training, and we were teaching at some of the same studios here in Melbourne. Over the years, like we knew each other, we were good friends here. And then I had decided to go to India, and this is where I met my teacher Pankaj there, and had done a very super intense about one month. I think it was 3 weeks long at that time, but about 3 weeks or so, just doing an intense training with Pankaj. And after that, had come back to Melbourne and was getting back into teaching again. And Stefan saw me in class. I was at his class one day and he was just amazed. He was like, "What happened to you? Your practice just looks very different." And I think this is when that other teacher had said, you're not doing gymnastics anymore. You're actually, you know, you're practicing, you're doing yoga. You're being a lot more mindful about the way that you are doing things. And so
I could so imagine that, him being like, "Oh, I want some of that."
Yeah, well, that's kind of what happened. I was like, "Oh, it's this teacher, this training, he's doing it again next year, I'm going." And he's like, "I'm coming with you." I was like, "Sweet." So it was great. We've been going every year since then, and it's been great because we have friends that come back as well and that we get to see every year and do the training with. And it's just been every year is unlearning what we learned the year before. It's always kind of just subtly changing and transforming, and for myself as well, it was definitely a transformational experience the first time that I went. That kind of teaching, kind of Iyengar inspired teaching, is quite tough, but it's kind of reminds me, I suppose, of my tough coaches when I was doing gymnastics back in the day. So I quite like that style. It's not for everyone. But yeah, that's kind of where over the years, Stefan decided he wanted to run teacher trainings and had developed one and started running it. And he had asked after he had done a couple, he had asked if I wanted to join, which of course there's no reason why I didn't want to spend a month with one of my best friends and to be in when he decided to do it in Indonesia was a no-brainer, doing something that I love to do. So I was really excited that he brought me on board and the past I've helped with board trainings has been really, really phenomenal and such a great learning experience. And I think ultimately as well with recently, I just ran my first yoga retreat in Portugal for 1 week.
Yes.
And I definitely think like that experience and learning how to hold space and layer the information over time, like not only has come from India, from the trainings I've been doing over the years there that go for a month, there's a lot of inspiration from that, but then also just having the experience and the inspiration from being at the teacher trainings as well was really, really beneficial and helped me grow the confidence to finally decide to host a yoga retreat.
Yeah, amazing. How did it go? The pictures looked sick.
It was phenomenal. Well, the pictures are by Loic. He's actually quite a phenomenal photographer. Yes, he
very useful.
Been the photographer. He's very handy in different ways. And honestly, like the marketing and what we've now decided to collaborate in doing with hosting the first retreat and starting Ayona Yoga, which stands for Essence of Non-Alignment. So Ayona Yoga, starting that has been also with the help of Loic, and I definitely could not have done that without him. He's been a big part of making that all happen. So
just for the listeners, Loic is Sarah's fiance.
And that's my fiance, he's phenomenal. He's left the room, so I don't need to say a lot of stuff about him. I can't help it, he's just really, really great.
And that's so lovely that you can both support
Well, I think that's one of the things that people say, you know, test a relationship is if you go into a business partnership with your own partner and you can survive that, then I think you're good. And I think like after seeing what's happened over the past few months, if we can survive that, then we're good. We're good to go. So
Yeah. That kind of lends me on really nicely to my next question. It's probably good that he's gone out of the room. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about choosing to travel in your 20s and some of the reasons why people want to, but they end up not doing it. And I think particularly a lot of people in their late 20s who've maybe done a stint in corporate and being like, this is not for me. And they're particularly fed up like in their jobs, or they missed out on travel in the like gap year days. But they're scared of going because sometimes people think they're putting off, they're delaying real life. And I think girls as well in particular. And they think that meeting someone abroad is like impossible, or starting a relationship. And even it can be worries about meeting friends. Cause I know like in your late 20s, you've kind of established your friendship group. It's like a kind of a weird time to meet new friends and like make a really strong friendship. So I'd really like to hear your perspective on that. And I guess like you firsthand have learned that that is just not true. Like you can meet your fiance traveling, you know? So it would be really interesting to hear your perspective.
Yeah. Well, one of the interesting things that when you were just saying or talking about all that is that the misconception that people are missing out on real life when they travel. And I don't think that's true. I think traveling is being real. Like that traveling is being the realest. It's being in the most real circumstances that you could possibly be in.
100%.
That perhaps there's this misconception that work and buying a house and having kids and having all the nice things that is the quote unquote real life. But really, who is saying that? It's our culture, it's our society, you know, it's our parents maybe for saying
our banks that want the mortgages.
Right. That all validates and makes your life worth living, which I've never really agreed with. For a very long time. I find it a very different. I just think completely differently on that kind of situation. And I feel like, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's unfortunate that people maybe they feel stuck. Yeah, they feel stuck because they get into a situation where, okay, well, now I have to pay for a car. Now I have to pay for a house. Now I have to pay, well, for children, if you have children, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I guess children, that is a whole nother circumstance, because they do become a priority, of course, when you have them. But that, you know, for myself, when I've gone overseas, I've just subletted my room. Someone else is paying my rent. That's pretty easy. Like, that hasn't really been a really troubling situation, minus this last situation where I came home and the house was pretty dirty, but, you know, just aww, a little bit of elbow grease and cleaning fixes that situation. Yeah. No big deal. But yeah, like, traveling has just been a way, it's kind of helped break me out of my shell. Now, I've always been known to be a talker, if you can believe that. I'd get in trouble a lot in class when I was younger, because I'd be talking. But then when I had to, you know, talk in front of people publicly, I was actually a nervous speaker in front of people. I would start to get the nervous laugh, so much so that sometimes I got kicked out of class, not just for talking, but then I was laughing too much. And like, it was just because underlyingly I was a bit nervous to talk in front of people. And then I took a Shakespeare class in my last year of high school, so grade 12, which we had to, this is going a little bit off topic in a way, but is it kind of, we had to, as end of the year project, was recite at least 20 lines, I think, of one of Shakespeare's plays. We got to choose. And if you did more than 20 lines, then you got bonus points. And I needed bonus points because I got kicked out of class quite a bit. And so I memorized like 40 lines from Julius Caesar, and the teacher was not very hopeful. I don't think a lot of people in class were very hopeful, but when it came to my day, my time to shine, I of course nervous laughed the first 30 seconds or so. And she was like, "Sarah, get your shit together." And then, you know, I got in the zone and I completely like just nailed the 40 lines, and everyone was just sitting there with their jaw open, looking at me like silent for a second, because they couldn't believe, and I couldn't even believe what happened. And then we're just like, "Woo, yeah, that was amazing."
Aww.
And that just broke that little barrier of being, you know, a little more confident to speak in front of people. And then also traveling, having to go and make new, like with my study abroad friends, or, you know, who became great friends of mine, it kind of forced me again to be open to meeting new people and to be interested and intrigued and question where they're from, what they're doing, how they got there, whatnot. And it was just something that over the years as well, like, it's always been really interesting, and like the people that I gravitate towards being friends with and connecting to are kind of in that same mindset as well. They're just really curious, and even if we have different interests, they still have this sense of curiosity, which I really appreciate. And that's, you know, like the kind of people that I tend to hang out with. And my friends over the years have changed. You know, girls that I was friends with in high school, we, you know, see each other through Facebook. That's pretty much it. But, you know, if I'm back in the States, I have maybe a handful of my really good girlfriends that I still catch up with. But then I've made so many other friends along the way through traveling. And that's led to opportunities for work. It's led to opportunities just, you know, to meet up while traveling, or have someone come and visit that I haven't seen in years. And like the teacher training, that's the whole reason in a way that Loic and I even met, was because I was helping run a teacher training in Indonesia. And we happened to meet there and sparks flew and we just made things work. He was still living in Indonesia. I was living in Melbourne. We did a little long distance for a few months and then we just decided we will kind of pretty much do whatever we need to do to be with each other. And it's just, that's become the non-negotiable is that we just want to be together and it doesn't matter where we are in the world. As long as we're together, as cheesy as it sounds, we're happy. So yeah, that was a really, really special moment. And it wouldn't have happened if I hadn't been traveling and if you know, pretty much every little circumstance in my life before that moment hadn't happened, you know, I wouldn't have ever been there.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's just a really exciting story. And I think there's probably another misconception about the amount of people who are scattered around the world living in places that aren't their homes. And I think there's so many of going to Indonesia opened my eyes into the amount of jobs that you can actually do abroad. Like Loic does the diving and stuff like that. And there's just so many different professions and loads of people out there just living an amazing life. I think it's important to kind of like debunk that myth of people thinking you're the only one that's going to land up in this place with no other people from other countries, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I guess when it comes to perhaps taking a leap of being out of the corporate scene, or then what's a quote unquote normal job or normal kind of lifestyle, is that, I mean, it's still even a discussion like Loic can have quite a bit, and it has to do with money and being financially secure. And I suppose it's something to think about, you know, it's suggestive, is what do you prioritize? And some people, perhaps, because of the influence and strategic way that corporations market, that many people are going to prioritize having a new car or a new iPhone, the newest, latest trend in clothes and whatnot. While more and more over time, that for myself at least, it was never really a big thing, but more and more over time, it's become less of a priority. And so when I'm saving up money, it's to go travel again. It's to experience life. And just, I realized more that what I prioritize and what I find is more nourishing to my life in general is just the experience of traveling and doing things as opposed to having things.
Yeah.
And I find that more and more, especially recently with a lot of cleaning that I'm doing at the moment, that getting rid of stuff is very liberating. And so really just keeping things that's really necessary. And what I find funny, because I only just recently heard of this Marie Kondo figure. Have you heard of her? The little cute Japanese lady that does the cleaning and stuff. I could have done that TV show for sure. I mean, I'm not as adorable as she is, but the things that spark joy in your life, I think is a really beautiful, beautiful concept. It's a really beautiful idea. And especially when it comes to things, I'm finding having less stuff is a lot more appealing, and that prioritizing the experience of travel or studying, education, whatnot, that putting what I, you know, I'm investing my future into that as opposed to a new car or whatever.
Yeah. I think that's so important.
So that's, I think, an idea that someone could perhaps ponder on.
Definitely. I think I think in like our Western world, there's so many, there is this road that the banks and the government and the culture kind of suggest that you need to have. You need to go out and get a job, then you need to buy a house. And it's like all these milestones that are supposed to be these big achievements. And I think some people, they want to own a house and they want that stability, and that is their success and that is their dream, and that's fine. But I think there are some people who think they should do that, and it's not really, if they're really honest with themselves, they would prefer to go and travel. And I think the problem is people don't, because they think they have to sacrifice something, or they should be on a different path. But it's all about like what you just said, like reframing your beliefs. And actually, you know, if travel and seeing the world and having that experience in your life, like what value do you put on that? And a house can wait, like a, you know, that stuff can wait. And it's not like you can't make money abroad or like starting your own business. Like there's definitely ways. So I think it's just really important to kind of do the internal work and figure out like what you do want.
Yeah. And for sure, like those who have, you know, have and things like that, and then they're like, well, I can't really leave because I have a house now. It's like, well, you could potentially sublet it or lease it out or whatever. Like there are opportunities of doing that. Like just make sure you don't have anything nice.
Yeah.
Good stuff that you'd let other people use if that's the case. But yeah, like there are alternatives, and it can be, I'm sure, a little bit scary to go down that path. But I find the things that kind of spark this sense of like, oh, like it's a little bit scary, but it's actually a little bit exciting at the same time. Mm-hmm. And yeah, perhaps that could be the case. Scary, but it's exciting. It feels good after. Maybe not at the moment, but maybe afterwards. And it's like, oh, am I gonna look back on my life and be, you know, be sad that I took that trip to Italy? Probably not.
Mm-hmm. I love this topic. I could talk about it for ages. But I know that we're coming up.
Yeah.
So I've got a little quick fire round that I tend to do at the end of each episode. So it's just three questions. Uh-huh. If that's all right with you.
Sure.
Perfect. So what is the best book that you've ever read?
Ooh, the best book that I've ever read. I think one of the most potent ones, and it was part of my teacher training, I have to say, is the Eckhart Tolle book. This Is Now, or The Power of Now.
Mm-hmm.
The Power of Now. I'm actually been really looking forward to coming back here because I want to reread it, because every time that I've read it, it hits me in a very different way. And The Power of Now.
And it's all about like living in the present moment, isn't it, that one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Great.
And I just remember there was a part on relationships that many years ago I thought was really interesting. And I didn't really agree with it at the time. And I want to reread it because that's something I'm just interested in saying, what was that thing that bugged me that he said? And I was like, that's not true. Like I was very resistant to whatever the idea was. So I really want to, I think it's on my shelf just over here on the corner. I really want to reread it now and see what it was all talking about, and see if I still feel the same way or maybe my thoughts have changed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's great. And I'll put that link in the show notes as well to that book for anyone who's interested. Okay, and the second question. So I've called this podcast the Well and Wild podcast. And just for your background, it's like for the sense that to be well in life, you have to do maybe some wild things and dare to go a bit against the norm. So what's the wildest thing that you've ever done in your life?
Oh, that's a hard one. The wildest thing?
You've done loads, well, I think.
I know, but like perhaps, I don't know, like I mean, I feel like obvious ones are like skydiving or running with the bulls or hiking through the north of Spain for a month. Like, oh, those are pretty.
They're all really like, good ones.
Kind of. Like, kind of. But I don't know. Like, in a way, there's something I can't put my finger on it, but I feel like one of the craziest things is just even like just the past year, like after meeting Loic, and just like everything's been super spontaneous. Like most everything that we've been doing the past 9 months that we've been traveling has been really spontaneous. And like a little bit of me just always think that this is all really a little bit crazy, but the spontaneity is really thrilling at the same time.
Yeah.
So in like a different way than like the obvious things. Yeah. I guess just being really spontaneous.
Can you give an example of like something you did that was really spontaneous in the last year?
Well, maybe even like getting engaged. I don't know. Yeah. Like that was pretty spontaneous. It wasn't really like that wasn't planned. I never thought I wasn't keen on getting married. Didn't really think that that was something I was gonna do. And then like when he proposed to me, I just didn't even have to think twice. I was like, Of course, that's not even like that's I don't amazing. Have to think twice about that one. So maybe that's pretty.
No, I think that's a good answer. Okay, and finally, what's the best piece of advice that you've ever been given?
Super simple, but something my dad always says is just do what makes you happy. He always says, like, if you're happy, I'm happy. And ironically, Loic as well started saying the same thing. And I told him, I was like, that's what my dad always says. Doing what makes you happy. Yeah. And then another one from my girlfriends, my good girlfriends from back home is to live a life of no regrets. So when I think about something, when I have a decision to make, I'm kind of think back on it. I'm like, am I going to like regret this, that I didn't do this or not? And there's very few, like I kind of missed and regretted not going on a trip to Egypt when I was studying in Spain. My parents were like, you know, oh, it's a little bit, the political situation isn't that great. We'd prefer you not go. I didn't go. My friend went, she had an amazing time. And it's one of those little things that kind of eats me up a little bit. I'm like, I had an opportunity and I didn't take it. And I don't, like, after that, that's one of those things that just, like, take advantage of opportunities that come your way. In a way, you're always going to know whether or not you really want to do that thing. So if it's not feeling right for you, then just, you know, being confident and listen to yourself and honor yourself that and the fact that, you know, if it's not feeling right, a situation, an opportunity, it's like, oh, it feels like it should be good, but I'm not really feeling it. Well, just don't do it. I guess that goes into learning how to say no, which also has taken a few years to learn how to say no. Mm-hmm. But also to say yes at the same time. It's a very confusing answer.
No.
Say yes so to amazing opportunities, but also say no to things that don't really resonate with you as well. So I guess there's a couple mottos. Do what makes you happy, live a life of no regrets, and say yes, but also be humble enough to say no.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I think there's some really powerful messages there. So thank you so much, Sarah. We're coming to the end now. What have you got coming up in the yoga world and things, and where can the listeners find you?
So at the moment, I'm located in Melbourne, Australia. I am teaching not only some public classes at various studios like Australian Yoga Academy and Kindred Movement. But then also have some workshops that I'm doing in a few weeks at Yoga Space Gippsland, a little intensive, and an inversion workshop at Australian Yoga Academy. And I have other things that I'm slowly planning, and hopefully another retreat. So if you are interested in checking things out, you can either check on my Instagram, is Sarah Zavick Yoga, very original, or also for retreats and other things that we're going to, Loic and I will be planning in the future, is on Eona Yoga, which is spelled E-O-N-A Yoga. Eona Yoga, which is
amazing.
Essence of Non-Alignment. Yeah.
Great. And I'll post all those links in the show notes as well so people can find them. But thank you so much. It's been such a good conversation. I love hearing all about your adventures, and you're so open-minded, and I think the listeners will find that really inspiring.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's really amazing as well to see you and how curious as well that you were, like, in the teacher training, and just seeing all the different things that you've been getting up to since then. It's only been like a month or two months now, and all of the different events that you've been going to. So I'm really excited to see what you get up to yourself, Susie.
Oh, thanks, Sarah. So that concludes episode 4 of the Well and Wild podcast. I really hope you enjoyed that episode. Sarah is so inspiring. She's like one of the happiest people I know, I swear. She's always chatting and smiling, and I just love her energy. And I think that definitely shone through in the episode. As always, I'd love it if you could send this on to a friend. Maybe you know someone who keeps talking about living abroad or traveling, and it's something that they really want to do in their life, but they just haven't quite built up the balls to do it. Maybe listening to this episode might inspire them to take that leap. So it'd be great if you could share it with them. Or alternatively, I think if you're listening via Spotify, you can click on the little dots and share it on your Instagram story. If you'd like to share it that way, that would be amazing. Just remember to tag me. And I really appreciate you supporting me. So thank you so much to those that do that. And thank you for listening. And I'll speak to you next week.